A dozen.
You're listening to This Week in Radio News. Radio news about radio waves, radio art, and more. I'm Tom Rowe, your host, and we'll travel across the ether to hear what's going on in radio news. The leading headline this week, the first week of January 2016. After 40 years, the purveyor of inexpensive electronic kits for hobbyists, Ramsey Hobby Kits, is stopping production effective January 1st. We end our heritage with a smile, not a frown, and say thank you to all our customers and fellow hobbyists, Ramsey's announcement said from Victor, New York. I'm Tom Rowe in Akron, New York. This week, we're going to talk to Steve Pierce from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, one of the thousands of low-power FM stations that are going on the air this year. WOOCLP in Troy, New York. We'll talk to Steve Pierce later in the show. We'll also hear a magic mixture of sounds from Quentin Tarantino movies and an alphabetical rearrangement of The Wizard of Oz later on This Week in Radio News. But first, the headline. Sometimes copyright cases are more philosophical than other lawsuits. Take two recent cases, one about a monkey's rights over a photograph and the other about who owns the rights to silence. On January 6, U.S. District Judge William Arick ruled against the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, who were suing on behalf of a six-year-old monkey, Naruto. Photographer David Slater handed Naruto his camera in Indonesia in 2011, and the monkey took the camera and snapped a selfie. The judge ruled that Naruto does not have any copyrights to the photograph. Quote, I'm not the person to weigh into this, unquote, Arick said. Quote, this is an issue for Congress and the president. If they think animals should have the right of copyright, they're free, I think, under the Constitution to do that, unquote. In November, Business Insider reported about the case of DJ Detweiler and how SoundCloud took down his cover version of John Cage's 4 minutes and 33 seconds composition. The song is famously silent, although DJ Detweiler's version's silence was, quote, not a track of silence and was taken down because it included Justin Bieber's What Do You Mean without the right holder's permission, unquote, according to SoundCloud. DJ Detweiler told Business Insider that it was meant to, quote, start a conversation about copyright for fun, unquote, saying the takedown was part of the performance. Radio France and Deutschland Radio shut down their medium wave transmissions at the end of 2015. While in the United States, the Federal Communications Commission is trying to save AM radio by broadcasting AM stations on FM radio. In Europe, authorities are moving away from the frequencies. Medium wave is the part of the radio band used mainly for AM radio broadcasting. In Europe, the medium band ranges from 526.5 kHz to 1606.5 kHz, with channels spaced every 9 kHz. In North America, it extends to 1705 kHz with 10 kHz spacing. The AM band can travel farther than FM as the waves are larger, but it is also much noisier with much static. Radio France and Deutschland Radio both said listener numbers have dwindled significantly on the band, and they've shifted programming to FM digital and internet broadcast outlets. Radio Today is starting an online radio stream aimed at radio professionals as a radio station about radio. The station will be based in the UK with podcasts such as Radio Today Program, Radio Stuff, Earshot Creative Review, and the Media Podcast, and presenters including former Real Radio presenter Guy Harris on the Breakfast Hours, ex-Atlantic 252 DJ Enda Caldwell in the afternoon drive time slot, and Freelance 5 journalist Stuart Clarkson reporting radio news, with RadioNewsHub.com providing hourly update. The station will also air live radio events and award ceremonies and conferences. Quotes, it's always puzzled me why the radio industry doesn't have a radio station of its own, unquote, said Roy Martin, Radio Today's founder and managing editor, about the project that launches in February. 2014, the New York Times profiled the prototype of a tool that records various kinds of internet content. At the time, it was called Kolok and was aimed to be, quote, as close as possible you're going to get the experience of interacting with the actual site, unquote, said John Ippolito, a professor of new media at the University of Maine, who advised Rhizome, a nonprofit arts group, in designing the project. Quote, it is reconstructing it bit by bit in a technology that is very close to the original and allows users to explore it interactively the way they could with the original, unquote, Now, January 4th, Rhizome was awarded a two-year, $600,000 grant to underwrite the development of what has become WebRecorder from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. WebRecorder will save content from formats that may not linger on the internet. Remember Friendster or MySpace? Anything shared there 10 years ago is lost currently in the Facebook world. Quote, in 1999, Rhizome founded the Artbase, a distinctive collection of technically diverse born digital art. In 2009, recognizing the fragility of these system-dependent works, we created a digital preservation program to care for them. We look forward to leading further innovation in the field of digital preservation through the WebRecorder project, unquote, said Zachary Kaplan, Rhizome's executive director. An early version of WebRecorder is available now at webrecorder.io. The Center for the Study of the Drone at Bard College in the Hudson Valley in New York just released a report called Drone Sightings and Close Encounters and Analysis, studying 921 radio-controlled incidents in the national airspace between December 2013 and September 2015. There were 327 incidents in which drones presented some level of hazard to manned aircraft in that time, and 90 of those involved commercial jets, according to co-authors Dan Gettinger and Arthur Holland Michel. Quote, we are looking to furnish stakeholders and the public with reliable, data-driven guide to the potential risks posed by drones to manned flight, unquote, Gettinger said. The Center for the Study of the Drone was founded in 2012 to expand the public's understanding of the opportunities and challenges associated with the development and proliferation of unmanned technologies. You can see more about it at dronecenter.bard.edu.
K-Billy Supersounds of the 70s weekend just keeps on coming with this little ditty that reached up to 21 in May of 1970. The George Baker Selection, Little Green Bag, K-B-I-L-L-Y. Joe Egan and Jerry Rafferty were a duo known as Steeler's Wheel when they recorded this Dylan-esque pop bubblegum favorite from April of 1974. That reached up to number 5 as K-Billy Supersounds of the 70s continues. As K-Billy's Supersounds of the 70s weekend just keeps on truckin'. KBILLY, home of rock.
Film editor Jacob T. Swinney put together this collage of sounds from Quentin Tarantino films. Next up, Matt Busey cut up the entire movie, The Wizard of Oz, put it in alphabetical order, and when the same word appeared, put that in chronological order, called it all Of Oz the Wizard. It came out the last week in 2015, and we'll sample a bit here, starting with the word like. That was Matt Busey's rearrangement of The Wizard of Oz called Of Oz the Wizard, available on Vimeo. The entire Wizard of Oz movie rearranged in alphabetical order at Vimeo.com. Next up, we'll go to Troy, New York to talk low power FM radio. Right now, we're with Steve Pierce from the Sanctuary for Independent Media and now WOOCLP.
Hello.
How did you come up with WOOC?
Well, it was a torturous process because one of the great things that's happened in the last few years has been an explosion of new radio stations, 1,000 new LPFMs this year alone. But the problem is there's only four characters that you're allowed for a call sign, and one of them is W. So all the good ones basically have been taken, the ones that mean something. There's a couple places on the internet where you can find lists of all the possible combinations of
letters. I saw
letters.
This list, yeah.
And so I would look through and look for four letters that meant something, starting with W, and then I'd look to see if they were available, and none of them were available. So the reason we chose WOOC actually is very pragmatic. It doesn't really mean anything, although if you contort yourself, you could get it to mean, woo, Capital Region. Which one of our volunteers proposed. In fact, we have a couple of station IDs already oriented to that. But the reason we chose it is that there are two other organizations with construction permits, one in Albany and one in Schenectady. And WOOA was available in Albany, WOOS in Schenectady, and WOOC in Troy. Uh-huh. So we thought we'd be able to do some co-branding by just having similar.
Very good. I like the two O's, too. It just like there could be eyeballs. They could be. You could have like a little owl as your symbol or something.
Yeah. The problem is I used to work at WWOZ in New Orleans. I was living down there when the station went on the air. And WOOC is very close to WWOZ. And so I'm constantly making mistakes calling ourselves. I'm sure this is going to work out. But, you know, we send out emails asking for support for WWOC or whatnot. But anyway, WOOC, we're on the air with test authority from the FCC. And we're really excited about it.
What is the frequency, Kenneth?
105.3. So it's a nice position right in the middle of commercial stations. It's actually the radio dial in our area, probably similar to yours, is really dismal. Lots of religious broadcasters.
WAMC is on every third station.
Yeah, they have a shaky signal scattered all across the dial, which I guess is why they have so many of them. But it's it's kind of grim. We're hoping for the best, and people have unfortunately gotten used to not listening to the radio much in the Capital Region except in their cars, and I'm not sure that we're going to be the force to change that, but we're going to try.
95.3? No, 105.3.
Yeah.
105.3.
The last available frequency, we really shoehorned it in. We had a great broadcast engineer, Michael Brown, out in Oregon, who helped us, spent so much time with us trying to find something that would work to sneak in a signal between the much larger stations without interfering with them.
And the studio is at the sanctuary?
Yeah, we built a studio. We kind of subdivided our space. It's an old church in North Troy. And we moved in there about 10 years ago, and it was unfathomable that we'd ever run out of space there. It's so enormous. And now, largely because of the big piles of stuff everywhere, but whatever, it's very difficult to find any space to do anything. And so we actually found some big sheets of plate glass in an alley in Troy. Some RPI students found them and brought them in and built a glass wall studio inside one of our larger spaces. It's pretty cool.
Is that's where the performance space is?
Next to it.
So up in that area.
Yeah, we wanted it to be wheelchair accessible. And also there's something kind of cool about coming. We do a lot of events already. We've been doing that for 10 years. So it's kind of cool for people who come into the space to see the radio station operating in the background. And we'll be broadcasting probably pretty much everything that we do. So it's pretty much an integral part of our performance space, and also we wanted it to be wheelchair accessible, so what the first floor is. But, you know, we still have a lot. We got our studio pretty much built, and now we have to think about production facilities and, you know, all music libraries, all kinds of stuff like that, but first things first.
It's low-power FM, which means it's 100 watts or less, but you're up on that large hill ridge overlooking the Hudson River, your antenna is, so you can actually, your signal gets out fairly far, right?
Yeah, we found one of our supporters has 5 acres in a suburban-y area very close to Troy. We were challenged to find a tower site because we can't be in Troy because there's a co-channel and another station on the same frequency too close for us to be in Troy itself. And so we needed to be on a ridge overlooking Troy, and we'd happen to have a supporter who's a big solar energy advocate. He actually had a pile of tower parts on the ground, which he's been meaning to do something with for 5 or 6 years. We ended up getting another donation for our antenna mast, but he was into it, and so he's letting us use the space. He's thrilled because he gets to use our internet connection there, a local internet provider that competes with Time Warner. It's called Massive Mesh. It's a wireless internet company, and they have a repeater on a water tower that's within sight of his property, and we just had to cut down a lot of trees. And he was okay with that. He said, you know, I've got a lot of trees. Cut down whatever you want. It's just been great to work with. We started on Christmas Eve. Petri Dish, one of the founders of the Prometheus Radio Project, came up and helped us put up the antenna. He helped WGXC too, I guess, with your on-air work. He came up and we figured out a bunch of the problems on Christmas Eve and went on with just a single song playing over and over again with a station ID.
What is the song?
It's called In the Time of the Now. It's a live recording from the Sanctuary for Independent Media by a local artist named Taina Asili. It's a great song about persevering over obstacles, and it's a great song. When we get on the internet, you can hear it over and over again. We chose that both because of the subject matter and because Taina is local, and also we figured that would be the least likely to get into trouble with the DMCA people, since we're using our own recording of a local song. Nobody's going to complain about that. We're starting to now get into the major leagues of worrying about all these rights issues that that are really frustrating because they're so complex, and really makes me angry, because here we are, volunteers trying to help musicians in the music industry, and the music industry makes it as difficult as possible for us to do it, which, you know, unfortunate, but especially at our scale where there's no paid staff, it's just really difficult to keep up with all that stuff. We're not doing it yet, but I'm just looking through the reams of information about startup stations, and that's one of the things that we're going to have to wrangle with.
Yeah, what's the Troy media landscape like?
Well, you know, you have the Troy Record, which is a journal register company. I think they've gone bankrupt, and you know, they're on the ropes. They've sold their own building. I think they were the owners of the Independent, which covered Hudson and some of the areas. So that's kind of the you know. So the Troy Record is a fading influence. We'll see if they can survive. And then you have the Albany Times Union, which is the major local paper, but they hardly have anybody working there anymore.
They have a Troy bureau or office?
They had one. They closed it. Oh. I mean, it's a bad time for local print. Well, any print media. Metroland just went out of business. The tax people came and closed them down. So
there used to be twice as many local TV stations. Not that they do a great job or anything, but now they're all have these co-joint arrangements where they have one newscast on two stations, and so there's as many newscasts.
It's expensive to do news, and they're greedy, and so it's a bad combination. They'd look to cut costs wherever they can. You know, one of the inspirations for me has been the local community groups that frequent what's called the TNAC page on Facebook, the Troy Neighborhood Action Coalition. And I was looking at it, and you learn so much from this. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, junk on Facebook that's just pop culture things, but I looked at that, and it's really kind of a model, I think, for what we could be doing with the radio station. It's super local content. You wouldn't know anything about these things happening if you didn't see it there. And these people are very knowledgeable about it. They're working in local nonprofit groups. If we could take that content, you know, make it a little bit more journalistic and put that on the air, I think we want to become the place that people tune to when something happens. Something as trivial as a fire engine going down the street to some controversy with the schools or with the city council or whatnot. I think there's a service to provide in that area.
Are you getting, our station started, people that used to work in radio or did a show in college or, you know, did a show and the Clear Channel bought the station out and they didn't do a show anymore, started coming out of the woodwork. Are you starting to get the old radio professionals and college radio people, or do they not know about it yet?
Well, I think not very many people know about it because we've been, we have a full program that we do already that's based on public presentations and workshops and so forth. So that's what we've been promoting, part of our regular venue programming. But we have heard from a lot of folks who are interested. They've heard about it one way or another, and there's a lot of excitement, people kind of dogging us about when we're going to go on the air and so forth. And a lot of it didn't actually take us that long. We got our construction permit in February and came on the air in December, so that's not too bad as far as these things go. A lot of people have been anxious for us to go on the air, and as you say, a lot of them are former college radio people who have very fond memories of being on the air when they were in college, probably more because they were in college than because they were on the air, but that's okay. Well, hopefully we can provide, if not the exact same social
similar
environment.
Memories.
But if you think about it, there's all these people who've been trained to do radio who have no place to go when they get out of college, because particularly if there's no community radio station in their town. So there's a bunch of those folks. WRPI, the college station at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, is the alma mater for many of these people who are interested in carrying on with community radio. And then there have been some commercial radio folks. You know, it's always a little risky, I think, to put people on the air who have prior experience, because the good thing is that they have prior experience and they can bring that knowledge in. But particularly with commercial radio people, you don't really want that, I don't think, on the radio station. They kind of have to retrain themselves or be retrained to change the way of thinking and communicating that they learned in commercial radio. And it's, you know, so they're slick and all that, but which is great. They know what they're doing, but they might not have the community orientation that we'd like to see on the station. So, you know, it was good and bad with all of that. We can't afford to be too picky, though. So
that's right. If listeners that don't know what the Sanctuary for Independent Media is, give us an idea of what that is and the website address and things like that.
Sure. We're at mediasanctuary.org. The Sanctuary for Independent Media started about 10 years ago. We're in our 11th year now. Originally, it was a group of people who were involved with the Hudson Mohawk Indie Media Center, the Hudson Mohawk Independent Media Center, part of the Indie Media Movement that started around the Battle for Seattle in 2000, I guess it was. And we had it was a small video production group that did a lot of anti-war documentaries around the time of the increase of the hostilities in the Middle East. And we at the time were really amongst the very few people speaking out against the war as it escalated. And we never really had aspirations other than to have a workspace for ourselves. We had gotten evicted from the space we occupied in downtown Troy, and a friend of ours owned a church that he offered to us for very little money. And so we started renting it from him, and we thought we would do we kind of huddled together in the basement. The heating situation upstairs wasn't very good, so we huddled together for warmth in the basement and did our productions, and figured we'd use the upstairs from time to time to have events to fundraise for our rent. And the presentation part of what we do, films, music, speakers, really became what the Sanctuary for Independent Media is. We still do production, but it's evolved into a reasonably ambitious presentation venue where we've had lots of great folks ranging from Amy Goodman and Chris Hedges to African touring musicians like Ali Farka Touré and Oliver Tukudzi. A lot of great stuff that really comes out of the indie media movement. And I think we still maintain that basic core value of independent media as epitomized by the indie media groups. And like many of them, like most of them, the original focus on web-based community-supported news has faded because there's so many other things like it now. At the time, it was the only thing like it. And so we've become something else. And if you check out the website mediasanctuary.org, you can see a lot of videos and photos and all kinds of stuff about what we're doing, and eventually you'll see a link to our online stream for WOOC.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.